Live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's the Zach Ballinger Show, where we help you find your direction through passion and purpose. My name is Zach Ballinger. I'm your host. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, Zach Ballinger. Make sure to pop into those comment sections, questions that you have for me and my guest. We'll make sure to answer them as we go along. Also, email me, zach@zachballinger.com during the show. We'll make sure to get to your questions there. Without further ado, Dr. Yin, thank you so much for joining the show tonight.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
So Dr. Yin, I want to jump right in here. What is your exact title and what do you do career-wise?
So I am a clinical psychologist / consultant.
And so can you describe what that means as far as first the psychologist part and then the clinical psychologist part, and then could you explain the consultant role?
Sure. So in a way, they're both one of the same. It's just a different population or group of clients that I'm working with. So when we're talking clinical psychologists, typically we're talking about doing counseling or testing with clients who have mental health challenges for the most part. And then if we're going to consulting, it has more to do with helping people in the realm of personal growth. So how can they do whatever they're already doing even better?
And so can you walk us through your degree? So let's say somebody's out there listening, they might be in high school or they might like, hey, this is something I've been interested in. What does the education process look like for becoming this?
So of course you got to graduate from high school. And then from there, for the most part, you would probably pick a degree in psychology for your undergrad. And that would knock out a lot of your prerequisites to apply for grad school. And the program that I'm involved takes you straight to your doctorate. So you do 2 years in, you pick up your master's, 2 more years, and you get your doctorate. And my program in particular is a doctorate in psychology, what they call a PsyD. But you can also go more of a research route, and that would be your PhD. And I can get into more specifics about that. And then in order for you to be actually practicing, actually seeing people doing the healing work, you do what they call a pre-doctoral internship. So after your 4 years of kind of classroom work, then you go ahead and do your pre-doctoral internship, which is a year-long job, essentially, collecting hours. And then you do a year what they call a postdoc, which is another year of collecting hours, getting your finishing touches on your skill set. And then you take a licensing exam or a board exam, and then voila, you become a psychologist after all of that.
Just like that, overnight.
Overnight.
So about how many year process is that? Let's say somebody's out there listening and they might be a senior in high school, and you know, you got to take this into consideration when you're doing any type of training or career. So we're looking at about how many years before if somebody's a high school senior getting ready to be a freshman.
I would say if you're on the fast track, it would probably take you 8 to 9 years. But on average, I would say it's 9 to 10 years out of high school.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. Now, what do you love about your job? What are you passionate about? What gets you going about this career?
So for me, before I decided to choose my career, there was two, I would say, prerequisites, things that I needed to have in order for me to feel good about this career path. The first one was, is it interesting? Because if it's not interesting and it's monotonous, it's kind of the same thing over and over again, I would probably get bored. And there's something fascinating about people. People are just very fascinating. You could have 10 people come in struggling with depression, but each one has such a different flavor. And the way that you go about helping them heal and overcome those challenges are 10 different ways. So there's something about the level of challenge, diversity that I love in the work that I do. The second most important aspect is this work meaningful? Meaning, does this actually make a difference? Do I make some sort of positive change in people's lives? And for me as a psychologist, it checks both those boxes.
And, you know, this is a difficult question for some people. Other people can answer it just right with a snap of two fingers. But, you know, if something about the job that you may not like or something that's difficult that people should know.
So with any job, even if it's your dream job, there's probably things that you're not equally thrilled about. And the part that's probably not super thrilling for me is documentation. So you got to keep pretty good notes, partially for liability reasons. So if someone were to come back at you and say, hey, you did this or did that, you have some sort of record of what actually went down. That's not super fun in terms of having to write notes. So that never goes away. And on the consulting end with my private practice, there is a whole different skill set that is involved. So it's not good enough, even if you're the best counselor in the world, if people don't know you exist, if there isn't some sort of business aspect to it, then you can't help anybody. So there's a whole different skill set around marketing, around writing articles or other ways to get your name out there so people know you are available. That's not always the most fun aspect of the job either, but it does go hand in hand in order for me to do the work that I love to do.
Thank you so much for explaining that. Now, I always encourage my audiences to do what they call preceptorships or job shadowing. So let's say we were to follow you around for a typical day. And I know it's so challenging for people because days change. Like me, my day is different every day. But if you had to describe a typical day and somebody was going to follow you from coffee and then they'd left the office or wherever you are, maybe at your home, walk us through a day. What does it look like?
So a typical day would be a schedule with the people that you are ready to see. So it's not a surprise. You know who you're going to meet that day. It's been pre-scheduled. And for the most part, I would maybe pop in there 5 minutes before my meeting just to review what we've talked about, make sure that we're laser focused on what the goals are, what is it that we're doing together. And then I would go through my counseling sessions, providing emotional support, getting more clear about what the challenges are, highlighting strengths, providing insight, leading people, guiding them into understanding kind of what's at the root of their challenges, giving them some sort of assignment, something that they can do practically to overcome some of these challenges. And that would probably go on for, depending on the day, 6 to 9 hours would be a typical day. I would see about that many people. For another aspect of my job, at least with the hospital, I do run groups. So groups would be a consistent of a number of people here for a specific reason. So if it's, I do run a trauma education group, for example. So they're there really to understand how trauma affects them. How can they navigate through it successfully? So that would go on for maybe an hour or so. And then in between that time is where I do the least favorite part of my job, which is documentation. So you got to kind of write down just a brief, quick and dirty summary of kind of what happened, what you want to remember the next time you see them. And that pretty much wraps it up. That would be a pretty typical day for me.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for walking us through that. That makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned the why for the job, but I'm just interested, when you got to college, did you have the goal to be a clinical psychologist right away? How did you know, because a lot of people out there say, Zach, I don't really know what I want to do. I want to help somebody. Or Zach, I like numbers. But how did you know to hone in on this particular career field?
So I took a very unconventional route. So I don't know if this is going to be applicable, but maybe for some. But I actually stumbled upon it in that I wanted to be a journalist straight out of high school. I did this cute little radio show in high school. Loved it. Thought that's what I wanted to do. And then I didn't want to pay for my own college. So I decided to enlist in the U.S. Army. And turns out I was severely colorblind. Did not see that coming. And so because of that, I couldn't be a journalist. To this day, I don't know why that's a requirement, but I couldn't report the news if I was colorblind. So that really limited how many jobs I can choose in the US Army. And mental health happened to be one of them. It was something that I can choose with my colorblindness. And that was kind of my way of testing the field, so to speak. Did it, loved it. Saw myself doing it for the long term and knew that, hey, there's some really hard stuff, hard stories, hard challenges. That's why I went for my doctorate, because I mean, I could have got a master's to do therapy, but with my experience in the military and the diversity, the complexity, I just wanted to be as equipped as I possibly could, which is why I went for my doctorate. I figured, hey, more education, more experience, it would probably sharpen my sword, so to speak, for the field.
Thank you for your service. And I appreciate that your honesty about that, because I think a lot of people do either fall into careers by happenstance, or other times there's something that lead us that way. So I appreciate you being very candid about that. Now, let's take you back to second, third, fourth, fifth grade when you were growing up. We're going to put you in a time machine. Was there a dream career that you always dreamed about being when you were a kid?
As a kid, probably like many kids, I was really into cartoons, comic books, that sort of thing. So I thought I wanted to be a comic book artist slash a graphic designer. I think that was like my dream job as a kid. And I did a lot of drawing. And I think as I grew older, I realized, one, I do not have a knack for programming. So I can't program worth my life. So there goes the making the video games. And then the art piece, I mean, I enjoyed it as a hobby, but just imagining doing it for 8-10 hours a day, didn't quite love it enough. And I don't know if I was talented enough either to really make it a career. So that kind of fizzled out as I got older.
Yeah, and it's just interesting how you mentioned like the comic book type characters, because when you think about those characters, you know, not to get too deep in the weeds, but those people generally help people. You know, like Superman and Batman. And so if you think about it, I challenge a lot of people to go back into their childhood and go find something that you love to do since you were a kid, or all you always dreamed about. Now, art, obviously you said art wasn't your exact, but this creativity that you're doing now and some of these different things in your job, and definitely helping people with what you do. So I really appreciate you explaining that. So, you know, what is mental health is so important nowadays. We hear it a lot. There's stigmas out there. You know, men are not allowed to be depressed and anxious. You know, the stigma that's out there, because I've dealt with this even in my own life. I grew up with depression and anxiety in college and had some problems with that, and then was able to rebound. Talk to us about this big thing out there called mental health, and how do we get better as a society dealing with this?
Zach, that's a very big question. Let's see if I can break it down a little bit. So I think we are more further along in society than we ever have been in terms of mental health. There is this undeniable realization that mental health, emotional health is imperative to your well-being. So that's the good news, is that we are more accepting of that as a culture, at least in America. I think some of the other countries are slowly warming up to it a little bit more. But you hit the nail on the head, which is there's a lot of stigma to it. And I've actually wondered about that before, because when people are physically sick and they go see a medical doctor, there isn't this stigma about, ooh, like, why would you go see a doctor? It's like, because I'm sick, right? Or I broke my leg. Like, there's no question about going to see a medical doctor. But when someone's depressed or anxious, or, you know, something's going on, why is there so much crap that people get for seeing a mental health person? And the only answer that I can come up with is there's something so personal and deep about our mind, right? Essentially, we equate our mind and our soul as the person that we are. And so if your mind is sick, then it says something really devastating about you as a person. So I think that's where the stigma comes from. It's just, oh no, like if you have mental health issues, then you're probably crazy. And you're not someone that we can connect with any longer. Which is terrible. It's a terrible, there's no real truth to that notion. And in order for us to overcome that stigma, my hope is that people are able to see mental health for what it is, which is clarity of mind, being able to understand what their emotions are about, what is it trying to tell you, being able to develop healthy habits, lifestyles, living a life of purpose. Those are all things that contribute to mental health. And not everyone hits it out of the park. Most people need some guidance, and there's no shame about that. Just like there's no shame in asking the teacher for help on a math problem. If you don't know, a little guidance can go a long way. And who ultimately benefits? The person who seeks help. So the idea is you don't need mental health resources for the rest of your life, but maybe just for a season. It can help you get over some of these humps, these barriers, and you can be all you can be, as they may say. So yeah, I'm a huge advocate for mental health and on any level.
I love that, Dr. Yen. You can definitely hear the passion behind the story and your answer. I really do appreciate that. You know, I just think it's so important nowadays, especially, you know, what I do in career development and helping people. A lot of the root of their problem stems from depression because they hate their job they're in. And yeah. So if we fix that, then we're able to solve a lot of the equation as well on the job career side. So I definitely deal with overlap with you a little bit in that area. So what kind of skills do you think you need to have this job, whether it be tangible or non-tangible, to be a good clinical psychologist, consultant? What kind of either soft skills or hard skills do you need?
I would say there's a lot of soft skills. One that really jumps out at me is, in my experience, there's two kinds of people. There's one type of person who is a very empathetic, you know, kind of wears their heart on their sleeve, feels deeply, connects emotionally. Awesome. But they sometimes get caught up in those emotions, feel too deeply, and they're unable to think critically, like think logically about how to like work through some of those challenges. And then you have the other extreme, which is people who are maybe overly analytical, very fact-based, that's how they think, but not a whole lot of heart. And that's the two extremes. And what I would say is, to be a successful psychologist, you have to have a pretty good blend of both. Meaning that when you're in the room with someone, you do feel deeply, you do connect with that individual. But when they're out of your office, you have to be able to think about what's going on, and in the session, for that matter, critically, how to think through what is really at the heart of what's going on. Can I understand what the real challenge is? Can I help walk through that with my clients? So that's the analytical part. And I believe that is a skill that is learnable. So not everyone's going to be leaning, I think, on one side or the other. Maybe someone's super gifted and they just found that sweet spot, like right in the middle, like perfect balance of empathy and critical thinking. But most people are going to be on one side or the other. Most therapists or counselors probably err on the side of empathy. So they need to learn the skill of being able to emotionally detach when it's time to think through the issue and do documentation and write some of those things. Other than that, I would say a love for stories, a love to just understand how people come to be and why they do what they do. Like having that kind of curiosity is really important for this this job. A desire, obviously, to help people heal. Probably a general sense of hopefulness that things can get better. If people are generally pessimistic and overly critical, yeah, you should probably not be a counselor. So yes, a certain level of optimism from that perspective, be able to write, read pretty well in terms of understanding data, information. Hopefully, and this is probably more of the gift part of it, that's a little bit harder to teach, which is what we call insightfulness, which is the ability to kind of put information in a coherent way and kind of read between the lines in terms of understanding what's going on. That's a tad bit harder to teach, but some people have that natural tendency to kind of see the big picture. And those are probably the, off the top of my head, some important skills that are involved in this job.
Thank you so much for that. That really helps a lot. That makes a lot of sense. I never thought about some of those angles of it. So appreciate it. I want to get to some of these questions that have come up, and then we'll finish it by sharing some of your links and stuff. So one of the questions that came in, it says, what's the difference between a clinical psychologist and a clinical psychiatrist?
Great. So they're both similar in that they're in the mental health field. That's pretty much it. That's where the overlap stops. So a clinical psychologist is a counselor by trade. So they're the ones that do the talk therapy. They do have a special skill set in psychological assessments, which is like IQ tests, personality tests. We're able to administer, interpret what those tests mean. Psychiatrists are really physicians or medical doctors who specialize in psychiatric medicine. And a lot of psychiatrists have been trained to do talk therapy as well. But the way that the field has moved, they're too valuable as talk therapists. So a lot of them just do a lot of drug related in transactions. So that's what most psychiatrists end up doing. But they do have the skill set of doing counseling. And that's probably the overlap. We both do counseling, but one's really medicine heavy, which is a psychiatrist. And then counseling heavy, which is psychologists.
And does the psychiatrist need to get an MD? Is that, do they?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. No way around it. You got to get your MD first, and then you specialize in psychiatry.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. The next question comes in is, how do you stay so positive after listening to people's problems all day?
Well, that goes back to the skill set of being able to emotionally detach. All right. If you're too in it, then it's going to be a lot harder. And again, I don't want people to believe that I am impenetrable. There are cases that are heavy, like super heavy, that even I believe one of my superpowers is I can emotionally detach. Some of that stuff weighs on me. Some of the things that are very dear to my heart, or maybe reminds me of something in my personal life. So I think that's really important, especially for early career psychologists, to get your own counseling. That will actually help sort out some of the things that are extra sticky. For whatever reason, you just can't parcel that out. Supervision and therapy for the psychologist will help that individual sort out that distance. So that's a huge recommendation. But the other part is remembering to stick to the facts. Sticking to the facts of what they shared, what's the evidence, what are the things that you can in a way measure, and sticking to those rather than the emotions, or even treating the emotions as part of the data points to your analysis. And I think that way you're able to have a healthy boundary around some of those stories.
Gotcha. The next question comes in and says, how many patients do you average a day seeing?
So it depends on what agency you work for. So I'm kind of dual role right now. So I work part-time for a major hospital, and then I work part-time as in private practice. Kids, you may not want to follow my model because I am a workaholic. So I work way more than probably is necessary. But if you were to get an honest answer from me, I would probably say on my private practice end, I see anywhere from 18 to 25, 26 people. And then on the Kaiser end, which is the hospital I work at, I probably see roughly probably about 20 or so people on that site.
You mean it a week or a day? Okay.
A week. No, usually each session is an hour, so it definitely can't be a day.
I was like, that doesn't make sense. Okay.
Gotcha. That's still
a very big workload. So
sure.
Absolutely. The next question comes in. What other things can you do with a psychology major other than being a psychologist or psychiatrist?
So the not so positive news is if you are only getting a bachelor degree in psychology, there's not a whole lot you can do with just that degree. And the reason why is because it's a bit too generic. Because what is psychology? Psychology is the study of the psyche or the mind, which means if your job has anything to do with people, psychology would apply. But that's a little bit too broad because most jobs deal with people. So versus, let's say, a bachelor's degree in nursing. Like that's very specific. You have those skill sets as a nurse. You can go get a job as a nurse. Psychology, a little bit too broad. So usually in order for you to do anything else, especially as a therapist, you do need to go to grad school. There's kind of no way around that. And I would highly recommend it because people are complicated. So you probably want to get trained so you know what you're doing. But from the bachelor level, I think that psychology is a nice stepping, like a stepstone or whatever they're called, right? To a platform for a lot of other different majors. People have gone into law. People have gone into business. Pretty much anything. You can go kind of leap from psychology to most majors because it involves people. But I don't know if that answered the question. Psychology alone probably does not warrant a direct job in and of itself. Kind of like a communications major.
Yeah, and I think you answered that perfectly because I know a lot of successful psychology majors that have went into business, for example, who've owned their own business, or they've went into sales, or they've went into marketing, or they've, you know, chosen a different route. So you're definitely not stuck there. But what you're saying is, as far as a medical to advance in that, obviously you're going to be doing more schooling, or you're going to be doing any type of counseling. So that makes sense.
Can I add one thing, though, which is as a psychologist, and this is probably the most exciting thing about the field of psychology, is you can create your own job. And that may sound kind of crazy, but the power of being a psychologist is that you can create niches that don't exist. For example, I know someone who really loves horses, equestrian, and they mix horses with therapy. So now this is called equine therapy. I know that's a thing. So they use horses as a way to treat people's anxiety or fear or whatever it is. So there's a lot of fields that can meld with psychology really well. And you will become the expert in that field because you're the one that created this melding of careers. So I think that's where the sky is the limit. You have the credibility, you have the knowledge base to work with humans. Now you can meld it with technology, you can meld it with business, whatever the case may be, a law, and it opens up a whole new pathway.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Now you're working on some cool things. You mind sharing with those you might have some books or any podcasts or anything like that you'd like to share?
Sure. So I just recently published a book called Choose Better, the Optimal Decision-Making Framework. So I think it would be perfect for your audience, people who are trying to figure out their career, figure out kind of their purpose. Choose Better provides a framework to work through that decision-making process, not just for your job, but just any sort of decision that may come across your way. And it's backed by a lot of science in terms of the field of psychology, but it's not a dry book. I would say that I have a lot of personal stories in that book just to illustrate some of these points. So I just authored that. The book just launched on Amazon last week, at least of this time of the recording. Right. January 26th is when it dropped. So definitely check it out if that sounds remotely interesting to you at all. And then I'm also starting a consulting firm with a couple other partners, trying to do some of this work internationally and hitting up business leaders and people who are into the personal growth space. So I'm doing that simultaneously with the private practice job I'm doing now.
And how do they find you? Let's say they're out there listening. And we're going to post your book in the show notes as well.
Awesome.
To make sure people have a link to that. But where do they find you if they're interested in? Do you have a social media or website or anything like that?
I do. So if you want to get a hold of me, and I'm totally open to questions. Students ask me questions all the time, either for their senior projects or whatever it may be. I'll definitely entertain the idea. But if you have specific questions, don't hesitate to email me. I definitely want to help if it can clarify whether this job as a psychologist is for you. If I can help in any way to clarify that for you, don't hesitate to email me. You can find me on my professional website, which is my name, www.timyen.com. And it has all my social media stuff on the bottom. I just started an Instagram called Choose Better Consulting. And I post a lot of quotes from the book and some other exciting things with author insights behind some of those quotes. So that can be a resource for you as well.
Wow. You know, that's so nice of you. You know, guys, you guys sometimes ask me, who do I connect with on LinkedIn or who do I get in touch with? You know, obviously me, but, you know, that's very nice of Dr. Yen to extend that offer. So, hey, we know you're busy. Obviously, you shared with me your weekly patient load as well as all these other cool things you're doing. So, Dr. Yen, thank you so much for giving back your time for the community. We really do appreciate it. We think this is very important, and we do really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Zach, for trusting me with your audience.
Take care and have a great night.